Now, I've got a special thing. I'd like a lady to come up here and just tell a quick little story, and we're going to get on with the program. This is a historic event, and I'm sure thankful y'all are here. This is Lynn Wyman. Ms. Wyman, I'll let you have the podium.
I'm Lynn Wyman, and I have Vintage Books on Parkway, and I am very much the most unlikely participant in a political banquet, so excuse me, I'm very nervous, but I wanted to tell you something about Senator Pryor. Last Monday, and this is Garrett Oates, and Garrett is a student at Pottsville High School, and last Monday, my husband Steve and I were in Little Rock at the River Market Books and Gifts. And we were eating lunch, and there was no one in there except us and this man and his friends at another table. And I called my friend Rita over, and I said, "Rita, that man looks like David Pryor." And Rita said, "That is David Pryor. You want to meet him?" And I said, "Yes." I said, "I was raised in the Delta, and he did a lot for farming, and what he did for farmers there was legendary. So I'd like to meet him, but more than that, do you think he might sign a book for Garrett?" And she said, "Oh, I think he would." So I went and asked him if he would sign a book for Garrett. And I just said, "Garrett, I want to get this book for Garrett because he works at my bookstore." And he is a young man who's 16 years old, and he knows probably more about you, Senator Pryor, than you know about yourself. Because he loves politics and he loves history. And so I said, "Do you think you would personalize a book for Garrett?" And he said, "Yes, I'd be glad to." And as he was signing the book for Garrett that I was going to give him for Christmas, he said, "Do you think Garrett's coming to see me Thursday night?" And I said, No, that's an exclusive Democratic Party banquet, and the tickets are expensive, and no, I'm sure he's not." And he said, "Well, I tell you what, if Garrett wants to come, I'll buy his ticket." And so we were stunned. We could visualize Garrett jumping up and down, and that's exactly what he did when I got to his farm Monday night. He was hugging that book and jumping at the same time and saying, "I'm so honored, I'm so honored." And he got to school the next day with his note, and his history teacher wasn't able to get a ticket to this banquet tonight. So he was thrilled to show that to his history teacher and all of his teachers, too. Senator Pryor, I want to thank you for such a generous gesture. It was so generous of you. You bought this young man a ticket to be a part of the history that he loves. You made him a part of it all. You did it without knowing anything about him. You didn't know or care about his social or economic status. You didn't know about his family history or his grade point average. You didn't even know if he was a Democrat. You just knew that he was an Arkansas boy who was interested in history and politics in your state, and you gave him a chance to be a part of the history that he loves this night, and we thank you.
Thank you. It's now my opportunity, I have the opportunity to introduce Mr. Olin Cook, who's going to introduce our guest. Olin, as you know, was the past chairman of the Pope County Democratic Party. He was a representative. Olin, if you come up here.
We are honored to have people from the University of Arkansas here tonight from the Pryor Center who helped with a lot of different things, and they're getting these two young men in place, and we'll get underway. I've been wanting this to happen in Pope County for 2 years. I had the honor, when we lived in North Little Rock, of working for both of these gentlemen when they were governor of our great state. And I don't know of any two men that I know of any stature that's more honest, want to do the right thing, and did so when the governor. We know that Dale Bumpers is a native of Charleston. He came out of the woodworks to run for governor. His only elected office was that school board member. and we know the history of how he became our governor. And during that time, he did a number of things for higher education, state parks, all kinds of things. And following after that, he went to Washington to become one of our U.S. senators. And following him as governor was David Pryor, who did some of the very same things. David was a native of Camden, went to Henderson for a while, graduated at the University of Arkansas at Fayetteville, there at law school. And then he followed Dale to Washington to be our other senator. Both of these men were highly respected. We were great to have these two people represent us in Washington as well as our governor. So it's my pleasure tonight to welcome them to give us some little entertainment about the past. Take it all.
That's the first time I have heard what we were supposed to do tonight.
Yeah.
David, that young man that all those accolades were given about a moment ago, I was reminded, most of you don't know it, but I ran for the legislature 8 years before I ran for governor and got soundly trounced. But in that particular race, we were having a little to-do north of Ozark, and the guy who was in charge of it called on somebody there, and he asked this candidate. He said, the candidate handed his literature to a man. The man looked at it, and he says, well, what's your religion, son? He said, I'm a Methodist. He said, why are you a Methodist? I said, well, my daddy's a Methodist, my granddaddy's a Methodist, my mother's a Methodist. Said, what's your political party? He said, I'm a Democrat. How come you're a Democrat? So my daddy's a Democrat, and my granddaddy's a Democrat, and my mother's a Democrat. He said, what if they had been Republicans? He said, I guess I'd have been a horse thief. David, I see you top that.
Well, I am glad that Garrett and other young people are here tonight. And I just want to tell you a little story about what happened in this very room in 1974. This man was running as governor. He was running for the United States Senate. And there was a very formidable opponent by the name of J.W. Fulbright that he was challenging in the Democratic primary. Senator Robert Byrd, the Democratic majority leader, came down from Washington to endorse Senator Fulbright, his longtime friend in the Senate. Governor Bumpers was somewhat unhappy about that during this particular evening. I'll never forget the consternation on his face as he sat there. I was running for governor, against Orville Faubus and Bob Riley and maybe one more, I'm not sure. And but we all spoke, and there was a huge crowd, no larger than this. I would just want to compliment you, Olin, all of you, and Jim, all of you for making this crowd possible tonight. And but in this very room, in this dining hall at Arkansas Tech, the meeting was over, and people were getting up and tired. We'd been listening to speeches, and Robert Byrd played the fiddle and all kinds of stuff. And finally somebody said, wait a minute, let's stop just a minute. I know everybody's ready to go, but there's a young man who didn't get called on tonight, and he's running for Congress. And young man, what is your name? And he says, my name is Bill Clinton. And Bill Clinton got up and spoke for 2 minutes, Dale. Do you remember that?
Sure.
And he lost that race, Garrett. He lost it, but in the end, he won. So you don't have to win every race every time, but just to be around politics and politicians and people who care about their communities and their political parties. I just am so proud that you're here and so proud all of you are here. I call this, when Dale and I get together like this, and we just kind of reminisce, I call this the Arkansas version of the Antique Roadshow. And so here we are again, and who knows, this may be the last Antique Roadshow we do, but we have a good time doing these. We've done several. And when Olin asked us some months ago to do it, well, we were, of course, very, very honored to not only be asked, but also to oblige.
You know, my father served in the legislature one term, but he wanted his sons to be politicians, believe it or not. You never hear that nowadays. And he wanted my brother and me both to go to law school, which we both did. Because he thought we needed to go to law school, he also thought we needed to learn Latin in order to be a lawyer, in order to be a politician. And we were taught at the dinner table. We had certain responsibilities and so on. And I can tell you that he was, I guess when I ran for governor, I felt that I was really being true to him. And I know that I was. When I went to Northwestern in Chicago to law school, and one night I got this phone call to hurry home. My father and mother had been in a wreck, and they were both killed. While I was a freshman in law school, I had to drop out of law school because we were all just devastated. And I think when I decided to run for governor, I was trying to keep faith with my father because he was gone. But he convinced me, and I can tell you, it's very hard to cling to the principles that he taught me. It's very hard to cling to those now because politics is so different. But anyway, I wanted to say that I came here 40 years ago the first time. I wasn't running for anything. And the women were having this to do in Pope County. And it was a splendid evening, not nearly as big a crowd as this was. But when I decided to run for representative, people say, have you heard Dale Bumper? I mean, for governor, people say, you know, have you heard Dale Bumper's going to run for governor? Well, I heard some people laughing about it. And I started out with 1% name recognition. And I don't know what I was trying to prove, really. It was just so insane. I tell people I ran to get off the school board. That's the worst job I ever had. But anyway, so it was. I called my sister, who by this time was very wealthy. I called my brother, who was a Harvard lawyer and really climbing the ladder at a fast pace. And I told him, I said, Carol, I want to run for governor. And he was pretty excited about it. My sister was not. So anyway, Carol was living in Chicago in Winnetka, Chicago suburb. He said, come up there Sunday afternoon. I'll get Margaret to come over from Cleveland and we'll talk this over. So I said, okay. So we all gathered Sunday afternoon in Winnetka, just my brother and sister and me sitting around the kitchen table. They had the money and they therefore had the clause on me as to whether I was going to run or not. I had to sell them. And when I got through making my presentation, my sister said, I want to get this straight now. You're going to run for governor with 7 other people in the race besides you? Yeah. And Orville Faubus is one of them? Yeah. And you have to run in the primary. And if you win that, then you have to run against Governor Rockefeller? Yeah, that's right. She said, I ain't putting a damn dime in this eagle. So. But about a week before the election, I had been climbing in the polls, and my guru, who did all of our television and everything, called my brother and said, we've got to have another $35,000. So he naturally picked up the phone and called my sister. That's all we knew to do. And she just threw a fit. She said, I'm not putting any more. She'd already put a lot of money in it. When I left Winnetka that afternoon, I had $50,000 in my pocket, which was not anything much more then than it is now if you're running for governor. But in any event, that all worked out, and Carol called Margaret, and he would not let her off the phone until she said she'd give the other $35,000. And you know where the first speech was I made after that election? The Cleveland, Ohio Chamber of Commerce. She got her money's worth right then. David?
This guy has the best memory and the best recall of any political person, I think, that's there, and that includes Bill Clinton, of any political person ever produced in Arkansas. I have gotten where, honestly, I'm sometimes embarrassed to go out the front door because I'm going to meet someone that I'm supposed to know, and I don't know them, and I've known them forever. I know none of you have that particular problem. But the other night, for example, I'll just give you an example. The other night, my wife and I were watching a football game, and she said, I'm trying to remember who Eli Manning's brother is. And I said, oh, yeah, okay, I know it. Let's see, is it John, Frank, Bill, Tom, whatever? We thought and thought and thought. I even went and tried to Google, which I can't do very well, and I never could find Eli Manning's brother. And so finally, about 2:30 that morning, Barbara kicked me, and she says, it's Peyton. And I said, what? She says, it's Peyton. I says, Peyton who? And she says, Peyton Manning. I said, well, who is Peyton Manning? She says, I don't know, but he's got a brother. I can't think of his name. That's how bad we drive down the road, and all we're trying to remember is who this was and who that was, and boy, don't they look old and whatever. But man, I look out in this crowd tonight, and for example, Nathan George, I went to see the great friend of mine and all of us, Lloyd George, not too long ago. I need to go again in the nursing home in Ola, and the nurse said to me as I walked into Lloyd, room, Dale, she said, and boy, he was a great ally of yours and mine too, in Yale County and in the legislature, but as I walked in the room, the nurse said, you know, he's not going to know you. I said, I understand that. I can deal with that. So as I walked in, he was sitting there in a wheelchair and had on a baseball cap, and I said, Lloyd, and I never told him my name, I said, Lloyd, he said, Governor, I'll be in 5 minutes in the governor's office and we'll sign that bill you wanted me to get. He knew my voice, and I was just so impressed, and once again it reminded me of the great opportunities that we have in public life and whatever to meet the best people on the face of the earth, and I have enjoyed every bit of it. Dale, I'm going to yield back to you because I can't remember what I was going to say next.
Anyway. Join the fraternity. Right after I was elected governor, the governor of Missouri, who was chairman of the National Governor's Conference, called and said, how would you like to go to the Soviet Union and spend about 10 days? And I said, I really love it, but I don't want folks here to think I've already defected. And now, bear in mind, this was 1971. So anyway, I called Bob McCord, Van. I said, Bob, what do you think people will think about me going to Russia here right after I've been elected? So I called McCord, and I said, how would you treat it? He said, I'd treat it like it ought to be treated. It's an educational thing. You ought to do it. Of course you ought to go. So I thought it over, and I decided, well, I got 2 years to make up for anything anybody says about it. But the best part of it was there was a radio station in Little Rock who had a roving reporter. He'd get out on the street at noon every day at some fairly busy intersection, and he had a question every day. And he would interview people who come up, put the microphone in front of them and say, what do you think about this? And the question that day was, what do you think about Governor Bumper's going to the Soviet Union? And I was listening. And I remember this old man, he was about, they told me later, he was up in his 80s, had a cane, came hobbling down the street, and they stopped him. Said, sir, what do you think about Governor Bumper's going to the Soviet Union? I don't know what he wants to go to Russia for. He ain't been to Cabot yet.
You meet some real great people along the way, especially out on the campaign trail. And I was out campaigning one time for office. I can't remember which office I was running for, but I think I was in Washington already in the Senate. And I somehow or another was going to El Dorado on a weekend, a Saturday or a Sunday, and the folks down in Calhoun County in Hampton got word I was coming through town. So they said, would you mind stopping by the VFW Lodge and saying hi to Miss Lily so-and-so? She's having her 100th birthday. And I said, oh, yeah, that'd be good. So we were driving down the highway, and we pulled over to the left and drove into the VFW Lodge and walked in there. And here was this lady in a wheelchair. And I said, how are you? I'm David Pryor, and I wanted to wish you a happy 100th birthday. And she said, oh, have you met my baby daughter yet? And I said, no, I haven't. Well, she said, come over here, Mary Jo, and I want you to meet Senator Pryor. She came over on her walker, and she was 82 years old. That was the baby daughter. Well, this lady, I didn't know what to say to anyone who was 100. So I said, you've sure seen a lot of change in your 100 years. Yeah, I've been against all of it too. So, so you know, those little things, those little memories that you take with you all your life, and they just really have a special meaning to you as we go, especially through the campaign trails. And I've enjoyed, some people said that Pryor liked the campaign more than he liked to hold office. I don't know, I always enjoyed holding office, but the campaigns were a special time to me because you were always thrown out there in various situations all over the state with different types of people of all walks of life. And that's what makes Arkansas a very, very unique state.
When the first, we had two primaries, you know, you had one in, I think it was April, and one in May. And I can remember in the first primary, I had been told that some of these mountain counties up north could not be relied on to bring the ballots in the way they were really voted. And so we were really apprehensive about
what. Now, why would you have heard a thing like that?
Well, I didn't believe it, of course. But I did call the judge at 2:00 in the morning, and I said, Judge, I've got 900 votes in that county up there. All I want is 900 votes. I don't want one that belongs to anybody else, and I'm depending on you. Now, this was 2:00 in the morning. I said, I'm depending on you to make sure that those ballots are counted right. Dale, don't you worry about it. There's only 32 votes out in little old country church out here 5 miles from town. Don't you worry about a thing. And sure enough, when the votes came in, I was 400 short. And it turned out just the way everybody had said it probably would. And of course, I wasn't anything I could do about it, but it turned out I got in a runoff anyway and won. I rented a suite in the, what's the tower, the one on the interstate down there?
Quapaw Tower.
Quapaw Towers. I rented a suite there. We started inviting people from all over the state that had voted wrong and giving them a chance to make up for it by hitting the drum with a little money. And so here comes the judge with four of his underlings. And they came in, and we had a room set back, and people would come in and they'd throw their money on the bed. And that was their atonement for having voted wrong in the first place. So we're back there, and the judge throws this money out, $20 bill, skewed. I said, Judge, I cannot believe you. I said, you know I called you at 2:00. Oh, I know that, Dale, I know that. I called you at 2:00 in the morning and asked you to save those votes, and you promised me that every vote would be counted. He said, we'll do it for you next time. I don't think you ever got a chance to, but.
We've got a special friend here. Dale's nephew is Archie Schaefer, who, as you know, is from reared in Franklin County in Charleston. And Archie, now, if you ever go to the Tyson corporate headquarters, the Taj Mahal of the mountains. You go into the Tyson headquarters and you look up Johnny Tyson and John and Don Tyson. The office right between these two individuals is Archie Schaefer's office. He has to sit between these two icons. But Archie was Governor Bumper's chief of staff while Dale was governor for a period of time. And one day in 1973, during the gasoline crisis and the energy crisis, Dale drove up in his big Lincoln to the state capitol and got out and came in, huge press conference. Everybody knew there was a big announcement. Dale got up, Governor Bumpers did, and says, "Ladies and gentlemen, I'm just here to announce that we're going on a huge gasoline saving binge in Arkansas, and I have today ordered Pintos for all the state agencies of government, the health department, pollution control, ecology, and whatever." And somebody, John Bennett of the Commercial Appeal, old John was pretty sour. You remember him, don't you?
Oh, do I remember him?
And I remember that he was in Little Rock, and we got elected to the Senate to get away from John Bennett. And then he came up there.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Followed us up there. But anyway, John Bennett says, "Well, Governor Bumpers, we were looking at the press office window and saw you drive up in that big old gas guzzling Lincoln with that state trooper at the steering wheel. Says, what are you going to do about your own car?" He said, "Oh, we've ordered a Pinto. We're going to start driving a Pinto." And so we've ordered a Pinto. So we walk back, they walk back in the office, and Archie walks back in and closes the door, says, "Uncle Dale, we hadn't ordered any Pinto." He says, "You have now." So Archie, is that a true story or not? I don't know. But Archie was my great chauffeur down tonight from Fayetteville. I came down from Fayetteville, and Dale not only came from Little Rock, he came all the way from Washington, D.C. today to be here with you tonight. That's the depth of his caring. So he's come a long way, probably longer than
any. One other story that happened not too many years after I came here the first, well, it was during the campaign when eight of us were running for governor in the Democratic primary. And there was a fellow running that was called Bill Cheek. He was an oil distributor from over in West Memphis. Now, bear in mind, there were eight people in this race, including him. Orville Faubus, the attorney general, lieutenant governor, everybody was in the race. But anyway, we were outside someplace in Polk County. And Bill Cheek was a pretty clever guy. And there was another man in the race who was a very prominent lawyer from Texarkana, Bob Compton.
El Dorado.
And so every place we went, Bob Compton would get up there and say, "I'm one of you. I was just born 5 miles right out here." And every place we'd go, you know, "He's just born 5 miles right out here." So Bill Cheek was going down the list of all the candidates. And he had different, Orville Faubus, he really cut loose on him. But he got down to Bob Compton. He said, "Bob Compton has been born all over this state. His mother either had the longest labor or his daddy had the fastest covered wagon I ever seen." It was just... Politics is a fascinating business, and things like that happen constantly. And let me tell you, there are a lot of things that happen that are traumatic to you. I was new to it. I mean, I loved politics. We were taught that when we died, we were going to Franklin Roosevelt, and we really believed all those things. It was an extremely fascinating time, and it made it so easy for me to finally make it, to tell you the truth, Orville Faubus so totally dominated politics in the state, and he was a totally different politician from what I was going to be. But I knew I couldn't compete with him. He was just the icon in the state. After all the things in Little Rock High School and everything, people were still really attached to him. And so I had to wait until some of that wore off before I could get in the race. And it really, it was a fascinating story because, I remember the day before the first primary, David, we were down at Pine Bluff in the it was Labor Day. We were down in Pine Bluff, and I had told one of my staffers, I said, I hear that Orville Faubus has a big announcement he's going to make, and I want you to go up there to it, and you call me on the phone, because I've got to speak down here at 145. There were 1,000, 2,000 people there. And I said, you call me and tell me what he said. And it happened that morning, because Orville Faubus was there on the podium with me at that moment. So I called him, Ed Lester. Mm-hmm. Was the guy who attended the press conference for me. And he told me, he says, this makes no sense, but here's what he said. He says that if he's elected governor, he'll be assassinated within 6 months. I said, well, I don't get it. What's the deal? He said, beats me. I said, did he actually say that? He said, yeah. He said, he'd be assassinated. And I said, well, I can't figure out a single rationale for that statement. But I was next on the program, following Orville Faubus. And I said, Orville Faubus has made an announcement this morning that if he is elected governor, he will be assassinated within 6 months. I'm here this afternoon to save Orville Faubus' life.
I've never heard that story. I've been around this guy all my life. I've never heard that story. It's a great story.
Thank you, David.
You think that, I tell you what, you think we're these two nice guys, humble guys? Not a word, not a bit of truth to it. We've got egos as big as a barn. We were not long ago at the International House of Pancakes having breakfast, and Dale was here from Washington. I was in Little Rock. We were over in the corner. We noticed these waitresses over at the cash register. They kept staring at us. And the longer they stared at us, they were talking about us. And I knew, and Dale knew, that they were talking about us, and the longer they talked about us, we just swelled up, you know, like a big toad frog. Boy, our egos were real. Mark Wilcox knows about this. He knows how that feeling is when you know somebody's talking about you and maybe saying some nice things about you. Finally, one of the waitresses came over and says, say, can we interrupt you just a minute? Sure. Says, we've been having an argument over here at the cash register. Which one of y'all used to be sheriff around here? You remember that day? Well, that'll take the ego down. Nothing wrong with being a sheriff. My father and grandfather and great-grandfather were all sheriffs down in Ouachita County, where Rosie and I are from. So nothing wrong with that. We're just proud of all the county officials.
David, tell them a story about your father coming and getting you out of school to take you down to the post office, and he wanted you to see something.
He did. That was in the old days, and my dad was a Chevrolet dealer and the sheriff of the county. And one day I'd gotten out of school and walked across the railroad track and walked over to the Chevrolet place. Dad said, come here, I want to take you across the alley and go to the post office and get the mail. So we did, and you could go in there and work the little combination, you know, and he always would let me work the combination and reach in there and get all the mail out of the mailbox. And so I was in there, and one day I looked over there on the side, and my dad and I were standing there getting the mail, and I saw this man in this black suit and this black hat, tall man, must have been 6'5 or 6", tall, standing there getting his mail. And I said, Dad, who is that man? And my dad said, oh, no, you don't want to know about him. I said, no, who is he, Dad? Well, we'll talk about him. So I said, well, I'm just curious, Dad, who is that man? He says, well, son, his name is Skidmore Willis. And I said, well, who is Mr. Willis? And he says, son, he is a Republican. And I said, well, Dad, what is a Republican? He said, you'll know soon enough. So anyway, that was the first Republican. That was the only Republican that we had in Ouachita County. And that was Skidmore Willis. That's the honest to goodness truth. Do you remember any Republicans in Franklin County at that time?
Yeah, the banker.
Most bankers, and not all bankers, but most bankers seem to be. A lot of bankers are.
We had, you know, the Republicans in Charleston, there must have been about 30 of them, but everybody knew who was a Republican and who wasn't. I was going to tell you one other story about Dan Quayle. It's the best story I have. Dan, believe it or not, sort of encouraged me to run for president. You know, he was later vice president. And I liked him a lot. He was not considered a Socrates or anything, but... one day, Dan and I were having a conversation, and I've forgotten exactly what it was about. But I said, oh, I know what it was. He was chiding me about being a lawyer. He said, you know, Dale, the problem in this country, we got too many lawyers. To be frank with you, his words were, too damn many lawyers. And I said, well, he was asking about my children. I have three children. They're all lawyers. My brother and I were both lawyers. He said, that's the problem. We got too many lawyers. And I said, well, Dan, I have a little trouble with that, but let me ask you this. This is a kind of a lawyer riddle, but let me ask you this riddle. My mother had a baby. Wasn't my brother, wasn't my sister. Who was it? He scratched his head and he said, well, I don't know. I said, it was me. He said, boy, that's good. That's really good. He went rushing over to the White House to see George H., who was president. Dan was vice president at the time. Mr. President, I've got a riddle for you. What is it, Dan? My mother had a baby. Wasn't my brother, wasn't my sister. And so who was it? And George H. said, well, it's you. He said, no, it's Dale Bumper.
That is a great story. That's what we call an inside Senate story. I'm going to tell you another inside Senate story. The Democrats, when we were in the Senate, they may have changed it since that time, but we had three elected positions in the Democratic Party in the Senate. We had the majority leader, we had the Democratic leader, the whip, and the secretary of the Democratic Conference. Well, one thing led to another, and an opening came up in the secretaryship of the Democratic Conference. And so I said, heck, I'm going to run for that. And there were two or three other of my colleagues wanting to run. And so they announced, and I announced, and we campaigned. I went to every United States senator's office on the Democratic side, sat down in their office and asked them for their vote. I did it for everyone except one senator. In a minute, I may who that was. But anyway, the night before the Democrats were going to meet in the caucus, and we meet in the old Senate chamber, the beautiful old Senate chamber, the ornate chamber, and we would go in there and have our election for our Democratic officers. So I called Dale up the night before, and I said, now, Dale, I'm running for secretary of the Democratic Conference. And I'm calling on you, my friend of many years, to get up in the conference and place my name in nomination to be secretary of the conference. And Dale, I'm asking you to make one of the great speeches you've ever made. I want a barn burner. I want you to tell every good thing that you've ever thought of about me and let my colleagues know why I'd be a good secretary of the conference. He said, great. I could hear on the telephone, I could hear his pen going over his legal pad, scratching on his legal pad. And he said, by the way, let me ask you one thing before you go any further. I said, what? He said, what does that position do? What do you do? I said, absolutely nothing. He said, you'll be perfect for the job. So anyway, that was Dale. But I want to tell you, this is why it's so important, anyone ever thinking about running for public office, don't ever hesitate or fail to ask someone for their vote. A lot of politicians make this mistake. Ask people for their vote. I did this Democratic Conference leadership thing, and I knew that there was one senator who didn't like me. And I said, I'm not going to go to his office and waste my time and waste his time and embarrass us by sitting there knowing he's not going to vote for me. So anyway, going over that morning to the vote in the Democratic Conference, who would I get on the elevator with in the basement of the Capitol to go up to the old Senate chamber but this senator? The two of us are standing there. We're not saying much to each other, good morning or something. He said, by the way, he said, aren't you running for secretary of the conference? And I said, yes, I am. He said, you've not asked me for my vote. I said, you're right. So I swallowed and I said, I would really hope you will vote for me. I'm asking for your vote today in a few minutes for the secretary of the conference. He said, you've got it. I won by one vote. I want you to know that. And that's the story of one vote. And we've seen some elections in this country and in this state in recent years. And this state and this country, maybe not this state, but this country is divided 50-50 like we've never seen it divided now between red and blue. And I hate red and blue connotations. I hate all that because I think we're one country. But things are not... Anyway, we can maybe want to talk about that in a little bit, but I just wanted you to, I wanted to tell you about how important it is to ask people for one of the most precious things that they have, and that's their vote. So,
I'm going to tell you one story dealing with Bill Clinton. It's the last one I'm going to tell, David.
You mean forever?
You know, the Coon Supper down at Gillette, Arkansas is an absolute must for any politician. I didn't know that. Didn't know much about Gillette or South Arkansas when I got into politics. But David learned early, and I soon learned, that you have to go to Gillette because there'd be 1,000 to 1,500 people there for the Coon Supper. And they actually cook coon and they serve it. And David loves to tell a story about somebody coming by with that stuff. And
you had the flu.
Was that it?
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking you told him that I'd already...
No, let me tell this story. I can get it. You ought to tell him about that plane crash that you...
I will. Tell him about the Coon Supper.
Dale was sick one year during the Coon Suppers in January. Third Friday night or something like that, I'm not sure. And so I'd heard that he had viral flu and was home throwing up and everything in his apartment. But I called him up and I said, Dale, you're up for re-election this year and you're gonna have to go to that Coon Supper. He said, I can't, I'm sick, I can't go. You tell him I really can't make it there tonight. So I said, no, you gotta go and I'm gonna come by and pick you up. We're gonna drive down there to Gillette, Arkansas. And you're gonna go there, we're just gonna stay a short time. But Dale, if you slight them, if you snub them, they'll never forget this on election day. So he said, well, all right, I'll be out in front of the apartment. So I picked him up and we drive down. We get just about to Pine Bluff, and Gillette is still about 30 miles south of Pine Bluff or 40. I mean, and we could smell that coon cooking from there. And I thought Dale was going to throw up in my car. And we were driving and he was getting greener and greener. And I said, boy, this guy's getting ready to be sick right here in my car. And I said, Dale, we'll slow down if you need to get out or whatever. We finally got to the Coon Supper, and they brought this big thing of coon. They pour this coon out in wash tubs out in front of you. And you're supposed to sit there and eat. They put it on oil tablecloths, and they throw some cornbread and some stuff at it. And, man, there's an aroma there that you can't quite describe. But Dale was sitting there, and I knew it was he was going to just, you know, become sick in his stomach. And finally, the Channel 11 news reporter came over and turned on the camera, says, Senator Bumpers, we want to see you eat some of this coon. We're going to put it on the 10 o'clock news, so take a big old bite of that coon. And Dale looked down at it, and he got greener and greener. He said, you know, I'm so full, I can't eat anymore. It's so good. And she said, well, when did you eat it? And he says, 3 years ago. He got by with it.
Bill Clinton called me one afternoon. We'd had a 12-inch snowstorm, and it was Saturday, and the snow was still on the ground, and Bill called and said, are you going to the Coon Supper? And I said, are you crazy? How can we go to the Coon Supper? My God, there's 12 inches of snow on the ground. He said, well, I talked to the county judge, and he said he'd swept it off. He swept the runway so we could get in. I said, I don't know. And finally, I agreed to do it. And I told him, I said, I'll meet you at Central Flying Service at 6 o'clock. And we started to, you know, I didn't think much more about it. But about 5:30, I began to think about it. And Betty was, as you might guess, any wife was saying, I can't believe this. And when I walked out the door, she said, you know, you and Bill Clinton both need a saliva test. But anyway, we went on, and we took off. And sure enough, the county judge had cleaned the runway off. But what he had done was to shovel all the snow right up to the end of the runway. And so when we came in, the front landing gear hit the snow, which had by that time turned to ice because the sun had been out all day, and it melted and turned the snow into ice. And the nose wheel hit it, and blam, we went circling out through this corn patch or whatever it was, cotton field. And Bill was telling a story. I said, Bill, open that door. This thing's going to catch on fire. He was so busy telling his story, he didn't know we'd crashed. So anyway, the thing finally came to a stop, and I hollered at him again. He had a state trooper with him. Governors had security then. I guess they still do, don't they? But in any event, the plane was nose down, straight up. And finally, the trooper reached over in front of Bill, turned the knob, got the door open, and we all jumped out, almost got sprained ankles. It was so high off the ground. And we started running across that field in the snow, and Bill said, boy, I bet we never lose another vote in Gillette. Now, that's the gospel truth. Every word of that's exactly the way it happened.
I backed out of that trip. I was at Central Flying Service, and I went home and built a fire.
Right? Oh, my.
Now, Dale, tell them that story. Are you through with that one?
Yeah.
Right, well, if you're through with that, I want you to tell another one that I like to hear you tell. Tell them that story about you and Rosie up there in the hills one night, and you're coming back from a big dinner. I believe it was a Democratic dinner, and you ran out of gas. You were running out of gas. What was that story?
Well, we stopped, and we couldn't find it. It was dark, little old two-lane highway, and of course we were just, actually, David, we were going to the dinner, and we thought we were going to be late. And we finally found this little old house, which had a gas pump out front, and we decided if we were ever going to get there, that's where we could maybe make it. So we stopped, and this kid came out. He's just a kid. And I told him, fill it up. And so he got over, took the pipe, the gas nozzle, and he didn't know what to do with it. He just futzing around with it, and I knew he was retarded or something. And I said, son, is your mother or father here? Nope. I said, is there anybody else here? Nope. I said, do you have any brothers and sisters? He said, I got a brother. I said, you've got a brother? He said, yeah. I said, where is he? He said, he's at Harvard. You got a brother at Harvard? Yeah. What's he studying? He ain't studying nothing. They're studying him.
Told us at the beginning of this show tonight that we couldn't go over 40 minutes. We've already violated that, but I'm going to give one final one. Dale and I were campaigning one time, and we stopped somewhere down around Lake Village one afternoon, and we were trying to get back to Little Rock for something, and I said, Dale, let's just stop right here, this nursing home right quick. I'm chairman of the aging committee, and they'll recognize me. I've tried to help seniors and whatever, so I'm going to give you a big introduction and me a big introduction, and it'll tickle them to death for us to be here. Egos once again. And so we got out of the car and went over toward the nursing home. The lady was out on the front with a walker. She must have been 95 or 6. And I said, how are you? Do you know who I am? And she looked at me real funny and long. She says, no, but you can go down to the information desk. They can probably let you know about it. They can probably tell you who you are. Well, I'm going, Olin and I, and all of you, this has just been great. But I want to say this, and this is on a personal note. To be able to serve, not only to follow a guy like this, to become governor of Arkansas and follow in his footsteps, has been a great honor in my life. But the real honor and the real privilege I had was to serve by his side when I had 18 years by his side as a United States Senator. And I'm going to tell you what, it was a great, great time in my life. And I will always be grateful, not only for what he stood for, what he believed in our country and for our country, but for the state of Arkansas that he loved so very dearly. And to have served with and by Dale Bumpers was the greatest privilege, I think, in my life. And I just wanted to say, Dale, in behalf of all of us, all of the Democrats and all of the Arkansans and all of the Americans, we applaud your service and we're so grateful that you have given us of your life and your times during this period. Thank you, Dale. Thank you. Thank you very much.
On behalf of Polk County Democrats, we'd like to thank you both for being here.
I have to report this to the Ethics Committee.
No, you don't. On behalf of everybody here, it was a true privilege for us to be here. And I'm just thankful that I got to be part of it.
Thank you, Dale.
I want to make an announcement, if I could. We have a new center at the University of Arkansas. And we're going all over the state, and we're recording lives of Arkansans. We're recording people who have made a difference in our state. Not necessarily just politicians, but business people and musicians and homemakers and everyone that you can imagine. And we're searching for new people to interview constantly. And should you have an interest in not only your family being interviewed or know someone of special interest who's done something special for our state of Arkansas or for our country, we want you to contact the center at the University of Arkansas. Now, just because it's in Fayetteville doesn't mean it's not statewide. It's statewide. We're going to partner with Arkansas Tech. We're going to partner with AETN. We're partnering with all of the other institutions of learning all over the state, and we want all of us to be a part of it, and we think it's going to be an exciting venture ahead. So be looking on the website for it. Thank all of you so much. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you, sir.